It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Oh, you mean tonight, see? I thought you meant... I didn't really think you meant one back, but I thought you meant like one vertebrae or something.
No.
I had no idea what you meant.
So if you see me shifting around, or if I cringe or anything, don't be alarmed.
I never am. You cringe frequently when we do this.
So. Not in
generally
pain.
Generally speaking, I'm like, oh, that means I did well. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast in the world. Man, I had like three of them and I lost them all. I can't remember what it's the only podcast in the world of.
Mm.
I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 244.
244, that's a number of significance, isn't it? It's like 12 by 12 or something.
No, that's 144.
244 means nothing. Go home.
It's you know, you could probably put 244 into Wikipedia, and it would show you every significant 244.
And if you saw an earlier cached image of the Wikipedia page for the number 25, it would say what the baby is using. Mm-hmm. Although, that's a pretty old cache now, so I don't know if it would still or not. So, for those of you just joining us, welcome. Here's how this show works. And we've done this 243 times before, so think that through.
Yeah.
We have a hat. It's magical. It has its own email address. themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, and people, good people, all sorts of people, really,
mm-hmm.
like five people, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with stuff, with little notes, comments, questions, topics, that kind of thing. And the hat, because it is magical, all on its own, magically, transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. I don't even have one of these servants draw out those note cards at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show. I learned a fun fact today.
What's that?
So, you familiar with the concept of an acronym?
Yes.
Yes. Would you care to define an acronym for me?
Well, an acronym is a... it's when you take like a name, like or something that has a series of terms in its name or its designation, and then you just take the first letter of each thing. Like instead of Federal Bureau of Investigations, it's FBI, and then that sort of takes over as the name of the organization. Thus, the NIM part of acronym.
Yes,
I think. Now, what I'm confused about though is, I think there's a special term for when the acronym is a word, is a valid word by itself.
There is, in fact.
But I don't know what that term is.
That term is acronym.
Okay, that's so an acronym has to be
exactly.
Also a word by itself.
Otherwise,
okay.
So FBI is not technically
that's right.
Acronym.
Not technically
it is
an
just
acronym.
An abbreviation. Right. This is what I learned today.
They call it an abbreviation, or an abbreviated
apparently.
Form.
Yeah, because it's an abbreviated. Yeah, apparently. No, I know for sure it's not.
Although I mean,
I don't know that for sure because just a guy told me.
Words are tricky. I mean, if people use acronym in this way to always stand for initialized whatever, well. I mean, that's how people use the term.
Yeah.
But if
sort of how nowadays we can totally use literally just wherever the hell we want.
Yeah, but if people are But yeah, I seem to recall that there was a specific term for when the word you end up with is a word in and of itself, but I wasn't sure if that was acronym or something else.
There's a great bit on a Mystery Science Theater 3000 episode where they're doing like a fun run or something for various charities, and Tom Servo says his charity is helping children through research and development, I think, which is an actual charity, the acronym of which is HACTRAD, or the abbreviation is HACTRAD. But what it turns out is actually helping children through research and development is the acronym for his charity, and his charity is very, very
really long.
Which he says several times.
Yes. Well, but, I mean, yeah. It seems like there should be, if an acronym specifically, like the STAR in STAR Labs or something like that, mm-hmm. in the DC universe, if an acronym actually has to be a word, there's got to be another term for, like, for example, FBI.
Shitty acronym. That's the technical definition.
Well, now that I think about it, I mean, not only is FBI not a word, but you don't pronounce it. Because there are...
Say FBI.
Yeah, there are a lot of acronyms that aren't words, but you do pronounce them. Like OSHA, right? You say OSHA, but that's not a word.
And this is how it came up today, because we were talking about... We have an Office for the Advancement of Underserved Learners. It's relatively new. And it's the accessibility at work, which is something that I work with a great deal, is now under the Office for the Advancement of Underserved Learners. And we were reading some stuff that mentioned the Office for the Advancement of Underserved Learners in it as OAUL. But they forgot to tell anybody that they were doing this. So somebody finally was like, what is OAUL? And they were like, oh, it's the Office for the Advancement of Underserved Learners, which we all knew what that was. And that was when somebody brought up this whole thing that it doesn't count as an acronym. And the word, I said, well, that's clearly a word. We're going to start referring to it as OAUL. Which apparently was a thing, because they were going to call it OWL, but due to certain cultural, historical significances of the symbol of the OWL, the actual chief officer for the Advancement of Underserved Learners really doesn't want to call it that. There are certain Native American and Southern American traditions in which the owl is a very, very bad sign. Mm. So he was not in favor of that, but I really like calling it owl. Anyway, how was your week?
Nothing really of note.
Nothing?
No, not really.
Didn't even get Fallout 4 yet?
We did, but I mean, I'm not going to talk about it because you want to play it and spoilers and all that. So
you talk about games all the time that... I haven't played.
I know, and you don't like when I do that.
I like it just fine. Just don't spoil shit. You can talk about things.
There's nothing I want to talk about that wouldn't spoil it, is what it comes down to. I mean, what else would I talk about, really?
I don't know. You've talked about it before. You talked plenty about Dragon Age Inquisition. I don't feel like you've ever spoiled anything about that for me.
Really? What did I say?
I don't remember. I don't pay
attention. It's hard to know what one could talk about without spoiling. Like, except to say that, oh, that kind of stuff.
Was
like,
it glitchy?
Well, I mean, it's just...
Is it confusing? You already talked about how apparently it references a lot of stuff from Fallout 3.
Well, I saw some like previews and stuff that did. So far, our game
so far
experience
hasn't been okay.
But to be fair, we've only gotten, you know how just about all games these days, like the first, a good portion of the first part of the game is almost a tutorial, and we haven't even gotten through that
yet. It's funny, I remember, much to my discredit, I still have never played Kingdom Hearts 2. I own it, never played it. Loved Kingdom Hearts, have played that multiple times. Huh. But I remember when it came out, and the big thing that was freaking out everybody and pissing people off about it is that it's like a 3-hour tutorial in the beginning before you can like save or anything. And I remember finding that incredibly frustrating, and now I'm like, I know a lot of games that do way worse than that.
Well, with
3 hours is kind of a standard nowadays.
With Fallout though, it's more of a, there are things you can do in the game that you don't have to do, right?
Oh yeah.
They're
Lots.
Yeah. So if you decided you weren't going to do those things, well, we would already, the tutorial part would be done by now.
Yeah.
But because these things in the game are, they're actually things that that my wife was really looking forward to doing.
Oh, okay.
Well, so obviously she's doing that. So that extends the tutorial out. Things that you couldn't do in previous games is what I'm getting at.
Okay.
So yeah, we'll probably be in this sort of tutorial mode for a long time, which is fine.
Yeah. Because
that's what Bethesda games are like. There's all kinds of things you can do if you want, and if you don't want, you don't have to.
I think a lot of more open games are like that. In the Assassin's Creed one I'm playing right now, like, there's this, I mean, I have a ship. I can travel all over the place, do all sorts of things. But the main storyline tells me a lot, like, gives me a lot of, like, here's how you do this kind of thing and stuff like that. And so it's this constant thing, because it's me, and I like to go around and do all the little stuff, find the collectibles, unlock the things, and all that.
Yeah.
But it's this constant, okay, should I go do it now? Or should I go a little further in the main story till I'm more comfortable? Like, I'm going to unlock the ability to use this or whatever, but I don't even know. Like, how I'm not so worried about the story continuing, but how much of this is useful for me before I start in on all the other stuff?
Right. Well, my wife doesn't really worry about that stuff. I mean, but of course, with the Bethesda game, you don't have to. I mean, you just...
Generally speaking, you can control the difficulty, literally. But
well, like Skyrim... Holy cow. Yeah. You can get hours and hours and hours and hours of play out of that game without even starting the main quest.
I remember the one before it, Oblivion. I believe I was the head of like four different guilds before I got anywhere in the main quest. Like
Oblivion,
like,
was the
you
same.
Left prison and you were supposed to go talk to this guy, and I talked to him, and then he's like, "Okay, let's go do this." And I was like, "No." And then I came back 60 hours later.
Yeah. Yeah. And my wife loves that kind of game. She loves it. I mean, she likes to do the main plot. She likes the story and everything. Yeah. But most of the stuff they do on the side are things that she finds really enjoyable. And the new stuff that that Fallout 4 has, not only is it going to be fun for those types of people who like crafty things, I guess you could say, in games, but it's actually going to have some kind of... Like in Skyrim... you know, the impact of your crafting on anything else in the game pretty much comes down to you've got better armor, you've got better weapons or whatever.
It was a pretty good crafting system, but yeah, it wasn't. It still didn't reach that mythical.
Yeah, it was incredibly impactful.
Matter, yeah, exactly.
But what you can do in this game, I think, is going to have an impact on things. Not changing the plot or anything like that, but it's going to be. I can see already that it's going to be something that becomes a more important part of the game than, you know, like the houses you own in Skyrim, for example.
Yeah.
So that should be fun.
Well, it's a shame you can't talk about it without spoiling
it. There's a lot that I'm holding back.
As you should. In fact,
I'm holding back so much, I can't believe it's even interesting, which is why I didn't want to say anything.
Oh, it's not, but even if you were spoiling it, it wouldn't
be. So just talk about your week so I stop boring you and everybody else.
No, I'm pretty sure you're just boring me. I don't think the others are listening.
That's just great.
Yeah, my week hasn't been that interesting. Still playing Assassin's Creed Rogue. I'm bad at it. I die a lot, more than I used to. Like, I don't know if I'm just not in the zone or if this is a harder game, but I die a lot. I started in on that third Lev Grossman Magician's book, Magician's Land. And it's weird. I've been very apprehensive about starting again because I remember like the emotional impact of the last ones on me. And so I was like, I'm going to go through that crap again. But for some reason, now that I've started, like, I'm just eating it up. I'm just way into it again. I saw a movie that I'm actually going to talk about a little bit. Not much, though, because here's the thing. It's a terrible movie. Nobody should watch it, even to watch just like a bad movie. It's not even fun as a bad movie. It's a terrible movie.
Okay.
It's called Arkham Sanitarium, and it's a found footage horror movie that I watched off of Amazon Prime. Free on Amazon Prime if you want to check it out. Don't do it. It's not any good at all.
It's a Lovecraft kind of thing?
It is. But, of course, that can't mean, that can mean shit. Most of the time, that just means something with tentacles, you know?
Well, Arkham, that's where Arkham comes from.
But they use that as set dressing, so they can have something with tentacles. But this is why I'm bringing it up. This is a terrible, terrible movie. However, it actually kind of understands the mythos in the sense that at a certain point, there's a bad guy who's really, like, possessed or whatever, I don't know, but is doing his monologuing. And in it, they actually seem to understand the point of Lovecraft. Because it's not evil. It's not about evil. It's about, you know, so vast and so beyond your scope that you are insignificant. And his discussion of it actually addressed that. And I was like, holy shit. This is like a $5 shitty horror movie. Okay, put it this way. There's a lot of stuff in it that is meant to be trippy and weird, like where static will appear on the screen and you'll get a weird image or whatever. And near the end, this happened several times, interposed with, and I'm going to explain this to you, but you have to understand, as near as I can tell, they're doing this seriously. It's supposed to be creepy and scary. But one of the things that gets interposed a lot near the end is some stop-motion animation using Play-Doh. I'm not even going to say modeling clay. Play-Doh depicting something with tentacles sexually assaulting someone. Using Play-Doh.
Hmm.
Like full-on. Like, the person has, like, a little red, like a Mr. Bill mouth and stuff. And they're being serious. And I'm like, who is this for? I don't... it's not trippy to me. It just looks shitty. People who, for some reason, are into that, because, you know, tentacle assault is a total fetish for some people, it's not going to do it if it's Play-Doh. And for people who are horrified by that, they're not going to be less horrified that it's Play-Doh. I mean, but they're not going to be more horrified that it's Play-Doh. Who is that for?
I don't know.
Was it that low budget? Because at that point, I'm like, just skip that part. Because it's not like it was a plot point. Like I said, it was just imagery in the back to be, like, crazy. But I'm like, it's Play-Doh. And I was like, what is it?
Well, they probably thought it was trippy.
I mean, it's trippy after the fact. It's trippy in the why would you do that
sense. Well, I think maybe they thought it was trippy in the sense of here is something that is at one hand going to evoke maybe childhood nostalgia or innocence or something.
Yeah.
And you're putting that image together with something that's horrific.
And they also, by and large, I think were playing it serious. And then the last like 20 minutes and stuff, they get really silly. And I don't know why. It's awful. But I like the fact that they actually got the point of Lovecraft, which is not about evil. It's about how insignificant humanity is.
Well, I wonder if... is Lovecraft further kind of suggesting... or maybe he says this somewhere. I haven't really read any Lovecraft. I mean, I can't, I take that back. I've read a little bit, and he's a good writer for the most part. But nothing that I would be interested in reading a whole lot of. But since his mythos is so, you know, widespread and somewhat ubiquitous, I know a little bit about that.
Yes, but that most of that has very little to do with him.
Exactly. But
August Derleth is responsible for most of that kind of thing.
But I wonder if evil, the concept of evil, is something that human beings invent so that they don't have to think about the real dread.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
I would say that fits in with Lovecraft's model. I don't know if that fits in with Derleth's adjustment of the mythos. Because when Derleth got his hands on it, he also did stuff that there's also good elder gods and things like that. Like, it's all over.
Right, I think I heard that somewhere, read that somewhere. It became
much more a good and evil kind of thing in battle. Whereas with Lovecraft, it's like, no, we're microscopic specks in the universe. So they will use us and destroy us and whatever, but it just doesn't matter to them. Mm. They're not evil, they just were like an ant. You wouldn't care what you did to an ant, you know?
Yeah.
And the fact that it knew that was good, but I don't recommend the movie. It's terrible. It's not even fun to just watch and make fun of. It's terrible. Don't do it. And that's it. My week's been busy at work. I'm getting a lot of responsibility nowadays. Some of which I'm taking myself. I'm coming up with ideas and I'm selling them to the right people, and now things are actually happening based on them, which is really kind of cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
I like that. We have a meeting and I'm like, you know what we need? We need this. And now I've put things in place and that's going to happen. And that's cool. It's very exhausting. So much easier when I'm just the guy who makes photocopies.
Yeah. I suppose.
Wearing me out.
Wearing you out.
Yeah, but not too much else. Oh! I did see two cool videos the other night.
Two cool videos?
Yes. One, I finally saw the Warcraft movie trailer. Which, you know, has been in talks forever, but now it's a real thing, and they had a full trailer and all that.
Yep. It
looked pretty cool. I'm probably going to be disappointed like I was with Watchmen, but mostly it looked like the game I used to play, but as a real movie thing, and that was pretty cool. And the other thing, I think I may have even shown it to you, Igo. There's this group that started doing real-life parkour, basically simulations from Assassin's Creed. They did one that was like when Assassin's Creed Unity was coming out, they dressed four people like the four characters from that and had them go all over France, or all over Paris, doing parkour stuff, and they were being chased by these guys dressed as, like, French revolutionary officers and things.
Okay.
They did another one for Syndicate, which just came out, that they did in London that was pretty awesome looking.
Okay.
These are, like, some very serious, like, acrobats and stuff doing some really cool parkour, just like in... And you can tell in some places, like, there are people who get surprised by it who were clearly part of it, but then other people who were just, like, out there. It was pretty neat to see. So that was fun, too. That's all I got, though. So, you want to hat some things?
Sure.
Okay, do that. Oh, take a nap. Oh, also, I should say, shrimp bacon grits cakes. This is what my wife brought me to eat for supper, and it was really good.
Earlier today, I had a terrible choice to make.
Oh?
As often happens in one's life, you're faced with a very difficult decision.
Yes.
And the choice was,
yes,
I was at Hertz Donut. Hertz Donuts, and I could either give a dollar to March of Dimes.
Yes.
Or I could get you a maple bacon Long John.
Ooh. I don't see anything, so I clearly have figured out. How do you feel about Hertz
Donut? You lost out to charity. Oh, I just had a... It's so weird because I get there and they have like... I was really surprised. They had one register and one person boxing donuts. It's no wonder they had lines out for... I mean, I know they were new and everything, but also they weren't really ready for a lot of people. Yeah. But I was there and there were just like two or three people ahead of me and the service was really slow, partly because I couldn't quite understand why... I mean, to me, it's this very simple thing. You go out, you get a box of donuts. Maybe you pick out 12. But how long does that take? But there was this woman standing there with like half a box of donuts. I don't know if they'd run out of what she wanted and she was going to wait or some. I don't know what it was. So I was there for a lot longer than I think I should have been.
All right.
I'll just say that. And I get up to the counter and there was a woman and her son in front of me. And she took, her young son, little boy. I thought, okay, they're going to get two or three things and go, nope, that took a long time too. I couldn't figure that out. So I get up there and I say, I just want a single glazed donut. That's all I want. I did see the Long John though. And I thought, man, I should probably get that for Tony.
Do they have? Because my only experience is people have brought them to work. And I understand them to be sort of an analog to Voodoo Donuts. And so all the donuts are these elaborate. It's filled with things. And then it's got stuff on top.
Just about all of them, yeah. Like
that's all. The one I tried was like a chocolate cake covered
in mint frosting. That was
with
there.
Oreos on the top.
That was there,
and it was fine. But it's not a donut.
No, I was looking for. I thought, well, maybe I won't just get a glazed donut. Maybe I'll get a cinnamon twist or something like that. They had nothing like that. They had all these weird donuts,
yeah.
And then they had some standard glazed donuts. So I just got the standard glazed.
Yeah,
and so I thought, okay, this is probably going to taste, I don't know, I was guessing maybe like a Krispy Kreme or, you know, several other types of donuts that I don't like as much as I like, say, Kelowna donuts.
Yeah.
Kelowna's a...
This was a raised glazed donut, not a cake.
No, not a cake donut, okay. Right. Kelowna is a town south of here.
Has an Amish bakery. It's really awesome.
Yeah, it's really good. And actually, the Hy-Vee bakery is not half bad. Hy-Vee is a regional supermarket.
My favorite is Daylight.
I don't know.
Daylight Donuts? You haven't been to Daylight Donuts?
Yeah. I don't even, never even heard of
that's
it.
That's the donut place in town.
Where?
It's at the corner of Scott and Court. Like if you're going to go to Midtown Diner, it's in the little gas station there. It used to be a Quiznos, and then later it was an Annie's Pizza Plus for a while, and now it's Daylight Donuts. And to me, it is the donut place in town.
Well, I'll have to check that place out. But anyway, I didn't think it would be as good as the local bakery donuts.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was actually really good. But it was a dollar, so it's like, well, if I can go to Hy-Vee and I can get it, a donut for... I don't know how much they are there, but they're not a dollar.
I have no idea how much donuts cost.
I don't think they're a dollar. So, and you have to sit there and wait because they don't have their stuff together in terms of service. And I'm not that interested in their weird donuts at all. So why would I go there?
I think that's the point of the place, and it was fine. I think there might be a time and place where I want those, but in general, for donuts, that's some elaborate confections, you know. That's not donuts to me.
Daylight
is donuts. See, they've got a lot of interesting ones, but they're still just donuts.
What's interesting about what you're saying, though, is that, like, if you go to Dunkin' Donuts, you get donuts. I mean...
Well, except I don't anymore, because Dunkin' Donuts are some bullshit.
No, I agree, but at least there's donuts there.
Yes.
And if you go to a cupcake place that's got all different crazy kind of cupcakes, well, there's still cupcakes.
Yes.
But you're right. This takes it to a degree where it barely seems like you're still talking
about
it.
She just climbed straight up the pole, and like halfway up, she decided she needed to play with the feather while she was still climbing.
Oh. Well, anyway.
Yeah, it just seems too much. And Daylight just nails it. Daylight, like, seriously.
I'll have to go there. I'll have to go.
Well, and it's also, this is how serious a donut place it is. It opens like 6 a.m., I think. Closes at 1 p.m. every day.
Really?
There's no point.
Really?
They just do donuts. You move on from there.
Wow.
That's
serious, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Sour cream donuts are my favorite. That's usually what I get.
Okay.
All right, so you drew something like 8 years ago.
Anonymous wants to know, what would your midlife crisis look like? Does this person really mean, what did my midlife crisis look like?
You're still at a time that you could. Have you already had yours?
I think I've had like three of them.
Well, you can have crises that aren't necessarily a midlife crisis.
Oh, okay. Well, the reason I say that is because a midlife crisis, unlike the other crises, like teenage angst, for example, isn't typically about what have I done with my life.
No.
Well, no. When I was 16, I wondered what have I done. I was only 16, and I knew that my expectations for what I could have done by the time I was 16 were probably a little bit unrealistic, but I still had that feeling.
Yeah, you're just a dumbass.
That's not teenage angst. That's me having a stupid crisis that I knew was stupid at the time, but for some reason I couldn't figure it out.
At age 16.
Well, and then it seems like there was between 16 and now there was another one, and I don't know if I've had any type of crisis like that since then. But
I don't think I've had one. I mean, according to my wife, and she may be right, I have a little mini crisis every early spring. About the time things start to thaw, I start apparently reevaluating my life and trying to figure out what I'm doing with it.
Doesn't sound like a bad thing.
No, and I don't, I just feel a little sort of lost for a while, but it's not, I mean, I don't, you know, buy motorcycles or have affairs or anything. The traditional midlife crisis routines. But let's look at the components of a midlife crisis. I believe the main factor has to do with, two things. But one is this the life I wanted? And frequently tied into the, I'm doing a lot of things not for me. You know, frequently I have a family to take care of, so I dedicate a lot of energy to that. That's not necessarily what I wanted. It was a responsibility. It was a duty I had to do. And so there's a little freaking out about that. And then, of course, there's just the... maybe now there's more years behind me than ahead of me. Fear of death kind of bullshit.
Well, I mean, I don't think I've ever had a midlife crisis, and I don't think I'm going to have one. But that's because I think of a midlife crisis in a very specific way. I mean, I think you're right. I think...
well, that's why I don't think either of us is particularly eligible.
Yeah, I think all the things you mentioned are the types of things that people go through when they're talking about a midlife crisis. But for me, it usually specifically means not just that a realization that, you know, to me, it's more of a thing that a person suddenly... it suddenly occurs to them that they could have lived their life differently. Mm. Like, they didn't really make any choices up to the time they were 45 years old. It's not that they decided to be dutiful or whatever. They just followed along with whatever everyone else was doing or told them to do. And suddenly when they're 45 or 50 years old, they stop and they go, hey, I could have done this different. Why didn't I? I haven't made a single decision of my own in 50 years. Yeah. Well, that doesn't apply to me. It
doesn't apply to either.
No. Yeah. No.
And even now, because I, like anybody, do daydream. And I like anybody who's probably not William, I do engage in... because there are some turning points in my life that I'm like, that could have gone very different.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will play. The big one is, what if I had come out of Grinnell College with an actual marketable degree? Because seriously... computer science degree from Grinnell College in 1999. Now, don't get me wrong. I know some people who got that exact degree at that exact time and didn't do much with it. But the potential there to have been a .com billionaire or something is really huge. That was just the right time. And I still occasionally play those little games in my head, but I don't really anymore for the very simple reason that any of those big changes, I don't end up with Trish. Mm-hmm. And that does not sound good to me. So I don't really play that game anymore. At some point I may start getting into some weird crises of fear of death. I don't know. I'm not there yet. But first of all, I did choose a lot of my life and I like where it ended up. But I also am the sort, because I do have moments, I've had them before, where it's like, oh, I've sort of been doing this all wrong, or I haven't been taking this into consideration. And those, I'm pretty sure... at least on the scale we're talking about like I've been living my life X,
mm-hmm.
where living my life Y would be way better, mm-hmm. or smarter or nicer or whatever,
mm-hmm.
are good things.
Mm-hmm.
They're always like, cool, I learned this. It's not like, oh my God, I wasted all that time. It's always like, dude, now I get to like up my game.
Yep, that's right.
There are smaller versions. They usually had to do with getting medicated and me finding out from people that I've been a jackass for too long. But I'm over those now, because now I'm just a jackass and I'm fine with it. But yeah, generally speaking, when I have that like epiphany, it's not like, oh my God, what have I done? It's like, dude, what opportunities do I have now?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So, I mean, I don't... But let's say somehow we're struck by this and we suddenly feel that we have not been living our life on our terms and we want to do something about it. What is the big, ridiculous, grand gesture that we do as a midlife crisis? Mine feels like travel's involved. I feel like I go somewhere.
Mm.
Like buy a truck and drive to, probably not Mexico, because that's dangerous.
This is a good question to ponder, because it would probably just be a more dramatic version of some smaller thing I do with a smaller crisis.
So a bigger podcast.
Well, like if I can think of a crisis that's smaller and more manageable, and I go shopping and then spend more money than I actually have, well then maybe if I was having a real crisis, I would go buy a sports car or something. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
But shopping's not my thing. But I'm trying to think of what I do to respond to a
crisis. I like to think it's travel, but I feel like mine is usually isolation. So I would stop doing anything social out in the world, and I would really just...
that's what I tend to think I would do too. I don't think what I would do would be particularly dramatic from the outside. It would seem very dramatic. I think I'd drop off the face of the earth and people would wonder what happened to me, probably.
And is this... and this is one of those things. What I'm about to say to me seems indicative of marriage or similar relationships. But I frequently have found out that a lot of things that I consider defining characteristics of marriage, a lot of people don't have in their marriages or consider them part of.
Yes, but to me,
I'm married. I'm happily married to a woman I spend a lot of time with, who I interact with constantly, who really is also my best friend. A midlife crisis could only go so far before she would wrangle me in. Like, I couldn't just pick up and travel to another country unless she agreed to it all. Like, I couldn't just do it by myself. If I isolated myself in the house, eventually she would drag my ass out of the house. Like, things like this. So the only real midlife crisis of that nature I could get away with would be to leave my wife. And I wouldn't do that. Because she would hunt me down.
Well, those are all good.
That is true. In which case, my midlife crisis manifests as a tropical cruise a year from this coming January.
Okay.
Because, Trish was about to turn 40 and had never left the country. That's why we took our cruise up to Canada. And she referred to that as her midlife crisis. Well, I have decided that on my 40th birthday, I'm going to be on a cruise ship somewhere warm. So January of 2017 will apparently be my midlife crisis.
Okay.
But yeah, it's just, I feel like the concept of midlife crisis is attached to a social structure and a marital and familial structure of which I have no relation.
Myself included in that, yeah, I totally agree.
And I think also there's a stress component and a complication component and a duty component tied up in children that I don't have to deal with either.
Well, I mean, you know, I raised three kids.
Yeah, you did.
And it was, there were even some, what I would consider very dire and difficult consequences and situations involved there. But I wouldn't say that I felt any type of existential crisis in it.
Did you ever feel resentful of raising
them? Oh, no.
Because I think that, in my mind, that's where the midlife crisis is you start to be like, I had to use so much time and energy
to raising these kids. Yeah, I think that does happen in a lot of midlife crises. But for me...
I do get that with my cats.
I typically sort of recognize a 10-year period there where things were relatively calm on the home front, and they were easily the best 10 years of my life. I would do it all again. I mean, there's just no question about it. I mean, if anything, I look back on the whole experience and wonder if I gave enough, you know. Like, I always thought I was giving 100%. Because that's what I wanted to give, 100%. But sometimes I wonder, well, was I real? You know, because human beings can be like that. And I find this especially true for me in lots of situations. Like, I'll think that I'm completely dedicated and committed to this thing, and I'm giving it 100%. And then it won't work out. And then I'll sort of review it later, and I'll think, well, you know what? I think I could have done more here. What was I doing? Why was I holding? I didn't think I was holding anything back. I didn't want to hold anything back, but it seems like I was holding something back.
I feel like you could have afforded $2 today.
But you see, what I'm saying?
Now
I'm just
imagining you doing the Schindler's List monologue at the end. It's like, this watch could have been 5 donuts for Tony.
Well, okay. See this, but has that ever happened to you? Have you ever looked back and thought, "Wow, I really thought I was giving 100% there," but now that I look at it, I'm not so sure I was.
I don't believe so because honestly, I've never. And this sounds like a joke, but I never feel like I'm giving 100%.
Okay, well, there is,
and I think there's a common thing. Failure can prompt people to question whether or not it is predicated on the fact they did not put forth enough effort. I think that is common.
And sometimes it's unrealistic to, you know, you have to be honest and say, no, I didn't fail because I only put in 90%. I failed because my 100% wasn't good enough. And you have to face that. But I think
I failed because of factors that did not involve my commitment to it.
Or level of effort, right.
I failed because that city exploded before I got there. It wasn't how much
but, I... But sometimes I think...
Why did I go to that example? That was weird.
Sometimes I think you just... or for me personally, well, for whatever reason, and maybe mostly it's an issue of, at the time, I was actually splitting my efforts or splitting my commitment, and I thought that that was reasonable or that that was how it was supposed to work or whatever. So I knew I wasn't giving 100% to this thing, but insofar as I convinced myself I was giving it as much as I could give it,
yeah,
it seemed to me like 100%. And it's later I realized, no, I was dedicating too much to this other thing that I maybe didn't need to be dedicating anything to that other thing, so I could have dedicated more to this thing over here. You see what I'm trying to say?
Yes. So much of my life comes back to this, and I don't understand why. I feel like I've mentioned this probably 3 or 4 times on the podcast before. My life revolves around this children's show sketch. There was a show called Square One TV. It was a good show. It was a PBS show all about math. It was basically a sketch comedy show, but all about math. So it was very cool.
Yeah.
I liked it. And I remember a particular musical number. They had quite a lot of musical numbers involving... It was a very 50s, 60s high school doo-wop kind of thing, and a guy in a leather jacket singing to his poodle-skirted girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire song was about how his girlfriend was unhappy because she was claiming she didn't have all of his heart. And he admitted that was entirely true. She, in fact, only had 8% because before she ever showed up, he already gave away the other 92%. And the song was largely about showing which things had what percentages. So his mom had a percent, and his leather jacket had a percent, the New York Giants had a percent. So, and I believe the last line is, I already went and spent 92%, but I'm saving all the rest for you. And so, you're talking about, I've dedicated some to this or whatever, and I was like, 8%?
Well, no, that's, it's 8%. What it usually comes down to is an issue of priorities. And I think that's the thing, when I look back on my life, I feel like I've made the biggest mistakes about is, you know, this thing wasn't a high enough priority in retrospect.
Yes.
Or something else was a higher priority that I didn't really realize or admit to myself was a higher priority. That's another thing. So yeah, I'm constantly reevaluating. Well, what's constantly happening is when something doesn't work out, I look back and it seems like a problem with prioritization is at work here, and I need to sort of hash that out.
But you've got to be careful, because there's a tendency to be like, huh, this didn't work. Let's look back. It's my fault.
I
suppose of certain types of individuals, including myself and including
you. Yeah, yeah.
There are some sorts of people who say, huh, this didn't work. Let's look back. It's everybody else's fault. Yeah. Those totally exist, but neither you nor I are them.
Well, you know, when I was working in applied system, not long ago, we talked about things that we've learned and things that have really changed our perspectives.
Yep.
And this was one of those moments. I'm working at Applied Systems, that, you know, we both work there, as people know, and I'm a manager there. And I don't remember who I was talking to. I think if I wasn't telling this story right now and prompt to, I'd probably remember. But anyhow.
Katrine Duarte.
But I was looking at a lot of things that had happened in my career up until that point at Applied Systems anyway. And I was talking to someone about it, and I was saying, well, this didn't happen and this didn't happen. And I tried to get this to happen, but that didn't work out. And then this didn't happen. I just listed all these things that didn't happen. And the person said, well, what did happen? Well, no, I it's like a light bulb went off, and I realized, you know, you're right. I'm not taking into account.
My team was firefighters. I ate a lot of pie. I got a couch in my cubicle.
I'm not taking all the data into account. I'm not being objective here. If I was objective, I would take other data into account, and I'd realize. Now, I still didn't come up with something that on balance was a success or anything, but at least it put things in perspective.
If you had never worked at Applied, no podcast.
That's probably true. That's definitely true because you and I wouldn't have. True. Well, we might have met some other way.
I don't think so, because it took years of being forced to associate with you for me to be able to stand you at all. So if we had just bumped into each other in the world, I just would have punched you in the face and kept going.
But in the last, I don't know, probably 15 years, I have tried really hard. You know, my first impulse is to blame myself or to put it all on me and have a complete lack of perspective in terms of my own role in something's failure. Never in something's success, by the way. I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
You'd think the same logic would make me take credit for a whole bunch of stuff that I shouldn't deserve to take credit for, but I only seem to take credit
for... That's because, of course, it's not logic at all.
Yeah, exactly. But as soon as that impulse comes and goes, I have to stop and go, all right, but look at the whole picture.
Yeah.
And... again, I don't often get to the point where I can, you know, pay myself a compliment or think that something actually worked out, but at least I can have some perspective on, because when you think about it, it's kind of narcissistic to put yourself at the center of a crumbling universe like that.
That's a not uncommon thing that has been discussed in a lot of places. You have to be fairly full of yourself to think it's all your fault.
Guilt is kind of narcissistic when
you
think
about
it.
But you and I do share that tendency in that, generally speaking, when something goes wrong, I immediately tend to blame you as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Unlike you, however, I've found this is a very useful coping strategy.
Yeah, and you're right most of the time.
Yeah,
so.
No, it works really well for me. Yeah. So. I did actually have something else happen this week I forgot to mention.
Oh.
Just today, I had lunch with an old college friend.
Okay.
Which is interesting in that it ties into this podcast. A couple weeks ago, I believe, we were talking about the gaming convention.
Yeah.
And how Trish had basically never gamed before, just like a couple times.
Yeah.
And then she mentioned from the other room, as she is wont to do, Jared Seaman had run a game for us. Who was an old friend from college and who had lived in Iowa City for a while afterward, and he had run a game for us and she had played in that. So she did have more experience. You may remember the story. That's the whole story. So next day, Dave of Id emails me and says, how do you know Jared?
Oh.
And I was like, huh? And I said, well, we went to college together. And apparently they met, I forget how they met, but they're buddies. And Jared's family lives in Iowa City, so he comes back here periodically, and he comes and sees them, and he was coming this week.
Oh.
And David was like, do you want to come up and hang out? He's going to come up and visit us. He's got a wife now and all this stuff, and they're going to come see us. And I was like, we can't, but I was like, give him my email and all this. And so Jared wrote back, and he said, do you want to have lunch Wednesday or Thursday? And I couldn't Wednesday. And Thursday, which today... Trish actually had back-to-back-to-back-to-back meetings, so we couldn't have lunch together. So I was like, I'll go have lunch with you. So he and I got together and caught up. It was really nice.
How nice.
Yeah. So that was neat, and was because of the podcast. So
cool.
That was kind of cool.
Very cool.
I'm going to draw a thing.
Draw a thing.
Wow, this thing's huge, and it's not even abridged. Oh, kitten, not now. Don't chew on it. I know you want to chew on it. All right. This is from Coffee.
Okay.
All right. The Lucifer graphic novel is going to be made into a feature film. Who would you like to see as the lead? What music, bands and songs and such, would you like to include in the soundtrack? Okay. Well, point of order. I don't believe it's actually being turned into a film. I believe it's being turned into a TV series. Yes. And I am fairly excited about that.
Are you?
I adored the graphic novels.
Yeah, I thought we talked about it being a TV show, and you thought you had some trepidation about it.
I do, because they always fuck that stuff up. Same way I have it about the Magicians one that's coming out.
Oh, right.
By the way, this Sunday is the premiere of Into the Badlands on AMC. Still don't know what it's about, but it's still people in wacky outfits fighting with swords, so it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Just before you got here, I set the DVR to start recording it. I think I read even more on it lately, and they're definitely going to take some liberties with the plot idea so that it fits more into a TV show format.
Yeah, what I understand is... Oh, I used to have what the little sum-up was. I mean, it's a similar thing where he's left hell because
he got sick of it
or something. There's some very kind of somewhat specific reason, but it's consistent with whatever it is in the comic book, so that's not the problem. But he, it's the angle is, it's kind of going to be a detective procedural kind of thing.
Yeah, I think he teams up with a police officer.
Yeah.
Which is very different, but I mean, I think they are going to have Mazikeen and stuff like that, so they'll still.
I mean, that was how they handled iZombie too.
Oh,
they
yeah.
But in the case of iZombie, they sort of created a whole different character. And whatever, but that's that their device is she works in the medical examiner's office, and so she helps this police officer. So I guess they thought, well, if it works for, I mean, iZombie's a Vertigo, is that a Vertigo title?
I don't know. I haven't read any iZombie.
Well, I mean, it's a DC something, Vertigo,
then
I think.
I'm sure it probably is.
So they might have figured, well, if this works for iZombie, it'll work for Lucifer. And maybe it will, maybe it won't. I don't know.
After Constantine, I feel like you can do a Vertigo title as a really good series. And I love Vertigo titles, so I'm kind of excited about this. But I mean, we'll have to see. As far as casting, I mean, I'm sure it's all done. But I don't... I have very strong opinions about Lucifer's overall in movies and TV. But the...
What do you mean?
I mean, I have people who have played the devil in things that I'm like, they did an awesome job. Oh, they did a terrible job. They did a really unusual job, but it worked really well and that kind of thing. But the Sandman / Lucifer character of Lucifer is a very... particular variety. So like even some of my favorite actors who have done the devil, I'm not sure they do a good job to this.
Gotcha.
I have a tough time. I still sometimes think my favorite version of the devil is from a movie is at the time to me unknown Viggo Mortensen playing Lucifer in the original Prophecy movie. Because he just had this nice blend of just being a guy, and then every once in a while and it was a particular affectation. His voice suddenly would get like this. But it was creepy as hell. It was really scary. And just really did a good job. The other one that I like, and I just love him in everything he does, in the Constantine movie, which is a decent movie as long as you don't compare it to Constantine at all. It's like David Lynch's Dune. It's a good movie. It's a terrible adaptation of the property. Peter Stormare played Lucifer in that.
I don't even remember.
And that was also creepy as fuck. But he was still Peter Stormare, and there's a sort of goofy, doughy quality to him that I like my Lucifer's very, you know, strong jawed and slick, very, very handsome, and even just a little effete, you know, at the same time.
Okay,
like that
kind
of, you know, it's a very specific, you know, anime character kind of.
But this version of Lucifer's not scary or
not especially
or evil or anything.
Still, well, but that still gets tied into it a little bit. I mean, the comic book version of this version of Lucifer, which you get in other places too, is essentially narcissistic to a degree that sometimes manifests as evil because of his complete disregard for everyone else. And it's hard to say because visually, any good lantern-jawed heartthrob, I mean, pick any major action hero nowadays except Chris Pratt. And
Chris Pratt is Lucifer.
I love Chris Pratt.
Never know. Maybe he wouldn't be.
They could cast a woman. That would get weird. But you know, most of the Avengers would be perfectly good visually for this. To get the attitude right. Oh. honestly, you know what? Funny. You know who I think would do a really good job?
No.
He's not going to. Like, I can definitively promise you he won't. Matt Ryan, who just played John Constantine in the TV show and actually guested on Arrow playing John Constantine recently. And who was the main character in Assassin's Creed Black Flag. I feel like he could do it. He has that quiet intensity, or he can manifest it, but at the same time he can be very casual and comfortable. I think I would like that. Who would you cast?
Who would I cast? Chris Pratt. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes. Howie Mandel.
Who would I cast? Well, I mean, I'd probably, before I cast it, I'd probably, like, go read it again and really try to get a sense of how he came across in the comics. And I'd probably try to find someone who I thought could fit that mold as closely as possible.
But you're not really doing it, and we don't have that kind of time. So, using what you can remember best right now, and actors you have seen.
Well, but see, so then the next consideration becomes, how old do I want him to look?
Yeah.
Thinking of people who I've seen act and who I thought, you know, I'd cast that person in something because I think they could really do it. Jensen Ackles. He's only ever been able to do stuff in Supernatural.
Never heard of him.
He's in Supernatural.
But
he's,
I did just think of another person.
He's one of the guys in Supernatural. Have you ever seen him?
No, I've never watched it.
He can act. He really can. But it'd be nice for him to get a role where he gets to, I don't know, be someone else besides who he's been for the last 10 or 12 years.
Yeah. Well, if they would just stop running that goddamn show, then people could move on. And in fact, I might attempt to watch it, but I'm not watching it as long as we're up to like 10 seasons and still going. I'm like, yeah, fuck right off with that.
Michael Rosenbaum, he was an awesome Lex Luthor. I bet he'd make a really good Lucifer with hair.
Okay.
And he hasn't done anything for a while, but he's good. He also has a great comic sense that you could work into the character that he's never really been able to bring to a role.
I just got another one. I've got two great ones sitting in the wings here. So.
Well, go ahead.
Well, the first one that came to mind, Adrian Brody.
Well, yeah, sure.
And, of course, if we're going that sort of character actor route, Daniel Day-Lewis I'm sure could, but that's silly. You can just name a role and be like, Daniel Day-Lewis could do that well. But then the other one that just popped in my head is Tom, what's his name, who played Draco Malfoy in the Harry Potter movies.
Mm.
But actually, as long as we're on Tom's, fuck all of that, Tom Hiddleston. That's a good point. No, Hiddleston. Let's make Hiddleston. Tom Hiddleston would make an amazing Lucifer.
Well, except everybody'd see Loki and whatever everything he's doing.
That's their problem.
That's their problem.
And they wouldn't. He does a lot of things other than Loki. You know? I mean, there's a little bit of that, but he has such a background.
Oh, Alan Tudyk? Is that type?
Alan Tudyk? Tudyk? Yeah, something like that.
Pronouncing his name right? He's awesome.
He is. I don't know how he'd be at Lucifer.
Well, here's the problem. Great. So, I bet he would be amazing.
Casting Mazikeen, I just don't even know where to start. I'm like, I feel like that's an impossible role. And it's such a simple role, but so hard to do. My first thought is like fucking, but she's too old now. Like Angela Bassett. I could see Angela Bassett nailing that role. But she's too old for it.
You know, I'm constantly watching movies or television and someone with some bit part is just doing a great job and I just know if they got a chance. And now I'm just drawing a blank on all of these. I know that there's young male actors that I've seen that I thought, wow, that guy can really act, and too bad he's got a bit part in this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he should probably have the lead, or they should give him something. Kind of like, no, I can't think of that guy's name either.
And we don't have enough time to get into the whole soundtrack thing, but we have to have Sympathy for the Devil somewhere in there. And then other than that, I figure just take the Crow soundtrack. That'll work fine.
Yeah, I suppose.
The soundtrack could get really interesting, but we just don't have enough time for that. But give me at least one shot at Mazikeen. Come on.
I have no idea. No.
It's a tough one.
No clue at all.
I feel like a likely one that would get it would be Summer Glau, but... And she could do a passable job in a way, but honestly, I don't think she's that good of an actress. I love Firefly. I loved her in it. I don't think she's got a lot of range. All right, well, tell us your Lucifer casting choices.
Yeah.
Tell us other fun devils
you're into. I'm sitting here trying to remember these names, and of course, everybody knows I'm horrible at it.
You could go to the blog and make some comments.
Yes,
like
please
you
do.
Never do.
Please do.
About this kind of stuff. Also, Jazz, where are you to tell us things? She's been a little quiet lately.
Mark's trying to catch up.
But... I know. He's working on it. Also, like us on Facebook. Also, listen next week. We'll have to record two next week because of Thanksgiving and all that jazz.
Yeah, Thanksgiving. But,
if you'd like to start your own podcast, don't do it. Just listen to ours because this is what happens when you do it. And you don't want that, do you?
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.